Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
Comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Kemba Walker. Step back.
Hello and welcome to the 8th episode of Full Court Press. Alongside Nick Merrick, I'm Josh Franz. On today's show, we have our usual gay watch. We'll talk about the new Celtics situation with Rajon Rondo. We'll have our ballers and fallers, as always. We'll break down the Big East in college basketball. We'll tell you which teams have a chance for the number one spot. And we'll give you our fun facts of the day. Nick, let's start out like we always do with the Rudy Gay Watch. Where is he going?
Gay Watch is changing for me, guys. I'm actually going to say he's not staying put anymore, at least as much as I want to cop out and say that. We'll dice things up. I think he's going to take his talents to where Steve Nash did not go this offseason, and that's the Toronto Raptors. I think he may become a Raptor. There's a big circulation that Jose Calderon and Ed Davis, maybe two centerpieces, involved in a trade to ship Rudy Gay up to Canada. The reason for that, which would be good, is because if you look at Toronto's roster, a lot of guard play down there where Calderon's pretty dispensable at this point now that Kyle Lowry shifted over there, but it's Andre Bargnani. He's basically the only big threat alongside Ed Davis. Ed Davis still the up-and-comer, but if they want to have a chance to compete, considering they're about 5 points back in the Eastern standing, which is a lot, but keep in mind, Boston now without Rajon Rondo, and we'll talk about that in momentarily. So I'm saying Gay's going to Toronto.
Yeah, I understand that move a lot for Toronto. You want to start building around the point guard of Kyle Lowry, then with Rudy Gay and Andrea Bargnani, you've got a trio that's not young. They definitely have their veteran in them, but they're not old like Boston is. So you have a chance to build something.
Nobody's old as Boston, right. Let's be real.
Well, the Lakers aren't exactly young. But you have a chance to see where that trio can take you. I don't know if I understand that one for Memphis, though. I like the point guards that they already have. They drafted Tony Rotten this year. He's up and coming out of Washington, a rookie. But then they also have Jared Bayless, and their starting point guard is Mike Conley out of Ohio State. He's in his fifth year. So they've got three young guards, point guards, who I think can lead this team just as well as Jose Calderon can. But I think Memphis wants to get some star power if they can get rid of Rudy Gay, who's a star in himself. I'm thinking he goes to Boston. I think Boston wants to rebuild. Rudy Gay's the perfect guy to do that with as the centerpiece there. So I think they send maybe KG or Paul Pierce with bench guys or a draft pick to the Grizzlies, so they have that veteran leader to go along with Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, and then with the young point guards, and they have a draft pick for the future to help next year.
I can definitely see that. I mean, if you look at it as well, Memphis is kind of at that awkward position now where they're actually close to passing the Clippers for third place, and then if you pass the Clippers, it's kind of anybody's game. So right now, San Antonio Spurs, Oklahoma City Thunder, Los Angeles Clippers, and Memphis Grizzlies are 1, 2, 3, 4 in that order in the West, and that's only 5.5 games between those three. So, yeah, if you want to bring in an experienced veteran, I think definitely now is the time to look over to Boston. But if you want to add an additional big man, if you're thinking a guy like Kevin Garnett possibly, or even a swingman like Paul Pierce, you know, there is rumors now, getting a little off topic, where the Heat and Cavs are currently going after Greg Oden. Also said the Celtics may be in talks there too, at least giving him a look. But if Rudy Gay gets traded, you got to wonder if they'd check out to the previous number one overall pick.
I'm not a GM, but I don't look at Greg Oden until he's done with the contract he started or the next one that he's going to do. I'll put it this way. Unless Greg Oden plays out a full contract without getting hurt every third game, I'm not going to sign him. I'm not going to pay millions of dollars to sit on my bench.
He's been having a lot of knee problems. Well, I mean, it'd be a good fit for Miami Heat.
A guy who sits on the bench is not a good fit for anybody.
That's true. But, I mean, come on, Miami's going to pay anybody they want to. Just have him on the bench. If he pans out, and they're like, wow, great, we got a great guy to throw in the rotation. But anyways, I guess back to topic. So it looks like third week in a row we've had six different options for him. So we haven't even kept consistent. That's how confusing the situation with Rudy Gay. He's going to stay. He's going to go. Is he going to go out east? Is he going to stay out in the west? I guess we'll have to tell there. But we mentioned the Boston Celtics, so let's talk about him a little bit, Josh. What about this big injury and how crucial of a loss is now as Rondo is gone? Is this a time to rebuild, or is it a chance to say, let's see if we can make one more move and at least make a push in the east?
Well, Rondo's out for a calendar year now, so he won't be back till around the All-Star break next year. We see how long Derrick Rose is out with his injury. It's similar. But I know you disagree with this. I think they need to rebuild. KG and Paul Pierce aren't getting any younger, and Rondo can lead a team with some young guys around him that can run the floor and be successful executing the half court. I say you get rid of the guys that won you a championship and move on.
Well, it depends on what you mean by, you know, moving on. If you're meaning just get rid of Paul Pierce and Garnett for a couple first-round picks, which I don't think would happen. Well, you'd probably get a first-round pick for a team competing, but I don't know if it's going to be that great of a move because, A, you obviously have a big fan base out in Boston. They're really supportive of the Celtics. They love what the program has done after bringing them the big three. Now that Allen's gone, however, now it's kind of the big two plus the new one in Rondo. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be the best move if they just start unloading right now, because that sends a really bad message out to the Boston Celtics fans and also the franchise, saying just because one player's out, we don't feel we have confidence to be able to take this through. Do I think it's a championship team now? Absolutely not. But the whole point is you have to at least compete and make sure you make the playoffs, because now all of a sudden there's been speculation saying, you know what, the Celtics are playing better without Rondo, so who needs them? And it's like, well, that may be true, but if you lose Rondo and you're just hanging on to the eighth spot and then you drop to maybe 10th or 11th in the East, then they're going to say, man, he's a big part of this team in the future, and then maybe that's when you start making moves. But for right now, you have to at least try to skate it out.
Well, as you know, I'm not a Celtics fan. I'm a Lakers fan. But I think we have similar mindsets when it comes to how we want our teams to be successful. As a Laker fan, for me, it's championship or bust every year. Yeah, it's nice to see them get to the finals, but if they lose, we consider that a down year because the talent we have, the money we have, and the possibilities are endless with this organization. I think the Celtics are the exact same way. They're not looking to get a sixth seed and win one playoff series and get out of the playoffs. They're going to look at that and think that is just as miserable as not making the playoffs. So you might as well concede the fact that you're not going to win a championship and better yourself for your future as opposed to handicapping your future for the false hope of winning a championship with a depleted roster.
Well, what if you look out then to Memphis? What if you think about saying, okay, maybe Avery Bradley could take the load at point guard, which he is actually capable of doing for a first-year player. He's only played in 13 games, but numbers aren't too bad. Just averaging under 10 a game.
Do you think he can do what Rajon Rondo did?
No, I don't. He's not that type of player, though, either. I don't think he's as big of a gem in the second round. But if you bring in a guy like Rudy Gay, let's say, if you want to go big, if you're going the championship or bust type thing, then all of a sudden, all right, well, now we have at least a building block for the future. Yeah, he probably lost a couple first-round picks in the process. But
no, they wouldn't lose picks. I'm not saying bring Rudy Gay in to win a championship this year. I'm saying get rid of your old veterans that are making about the same amount of money as Rudy Gay. Yes. So then you build around him for the future.
You could
forget about
or,
this year completely.
Or you could do both. Or you could bring in Rudy Gay.
There's no way you're getting Rudy Gay without getting rid of Pierce or Garnett.
I guess so. I mean, yeah, because you got to match him with contract. But I don't know.
Rudy Gay are both making $16 million.
Yeah, which is a lot.
Right.
They aren't going to get rid of Pierce, though. I don't see him getting rid of Pierce right now.
Why?
I think Pierce is going to retire as a Celtic.
He's not going to win a championship. He's done winning championships as a Celtic. Why would you hold on to a guy that's not going to help you win championships? I don't understand.
I don't know. I guess it's a fan loyalty thing. I just don't see him. I don't see Paul Pierce wanting to leave, even.
It's not up to him. The organization says, hey, our job is to win championships. The roster we have as currently constituted with Rajon Rondo hurt cannot win championships. Let's make it so we can win championships. That means getting rid of the players who are detriments, like Paul Pierce because he's 85 years old, and Kevin Garnett because he's 88 years old. 80-10, yeah. He's old. And bring in a young superstar that you can build around, like they built around Paul Pierce 12 years ago.
I mean, yeah, it's a good idea. I just don't know. I don't know if they're going to – well, if they make the moves – yeah, I agree. If you get a trade for a superstar like Rudy Gay, they have to pull the trigger. But they aren't going to just ship Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett off for nothing. They got to get some return back for
them. There is some value. As you said, for contending teams, you're going to get a first pick and maybe a young guy.
Yeah, I mean, if you do that, that's fine. But I mean, even if you right now, if you kick off, let's say Garnett goes, then all of a sudden Paul Pierce, your only quote unquote go to guy for the rest of the season. Oh my gosh, you're gonna have what Pierce?
You know what you're gonna
Jason
have?
Jason Terry, Jeff Green, and Courtney Lee on the court.
You know, more importantly, you know what you're gonna have? You're gonna get whoever you got in the trade for Kevin Garnett, and you're going to have 2 first-round draft picks next year. If you trade Pierce, you get a 3rd first-round draft pick next year, and that's how you start rebuilding.
No, I don't know if you get 2 first-rounders for Kevin Garnett.
No, you get
though.
1 for Kevin. No, listen. You already have your draft pick you
oh,
have yourself.
Gotcha. 1 then for Kevin and 1 for Pierce.
1 for Kevin, 1 for Pierce. That's 3 draft picks. Maybe you get Rudy Gay back because they want to get rid of him so badly. It might be Rudy Gay and a 1st for Pierce.
It'd be a bad move this year because I think the draft class coming in is pretty weak.
But you can't rebuild 3 years from now. Then that's when the fans get pissed. If you wait 2.5 years and then start rebuilding, you have to try to win a championship now so that you can – you have to start rebuilding now so you can win a championship down the line. If you start trying to win a championship in 3 years, it's not going to come for 7 or 8 years.
I don't know, though. Do you think they're going to have enough with Pierce and Garnett just saying we could – maybe if we just keep them healthy, we could they'll come back for 1 more year and stay loyal and they'll go for it again? It's a possibility. It's not like they don't have the firepower now. I think they need 1 more piece, but I don't think they need a gigantic one. I don't think you need to rebuild just yet. I think the pieces are there. The team can compete. Yeah, they've had their rough patches. But if Bradley can come in and even be half a player as Rondo and maybe bring in more of a 6-man role right before the trade deadline in the next month, then you're looking okay. So that's why I'm not going to be set completely on unloading. But if you ask this question 2 weeks from now, I may have a completely different mindset. Could all of a sudden – now you're kind of 10th place looking out. Forget it. Like, you might as well try to ship the guys while you can.
Yeah, and who knows if they'll come back next year? Who knows if they'll still be healthy at old age? Rondo won't come back till about All-Star break next year. So I say get rid of everybody. But let's move on. I have my ballers and fallers for this week. My baller is Atlanta shooting guard Kyle Korver. In his past 7 games, he is averaging 4 threes a night. I'm sorry, he's averaging 5 threes a night, 20 points a game, 5.5 rebounds, nearly 3 assists, and a steal and a half a game. That's Kyle Korver over the past week.
Pretty darn solid.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time he was averaging 5 threes a game.
Yeah, poor Boston on top of that dropped 8 threes against him. Wow.
When he's open, he's hitting. When he's guarded, he's hitting. Kyle Korver's playing. He's played 42 minutes a game in the past week. So he's on fire right now. So, but the guy who's not on fire is a baller I've had on my list before. I'm sorry, a faller I've had on my list before, and he just continues to fall.
So now it's the bottomless pit?
If he falls any further, he might just be there. It's Gerald Wallace. Over the past week, he's 6 points a game, 3.5 rebounds, 2 assists.
Poor guy. Is that back-to-back weeks, too, on the faller list?
It might just be.
Man,
you think with the Nets coaching change it was going to help. It's helped Darren Williams. It hasn't helped Gerald Wallace. He continues to struggle. The Nets are still looking okay in the standings, but maybe if you're New Jersey, you trade Gerald Wallace because he's not producing at all and see what you can get for him.
Interesting take there. I mean, doing pretty bad stuff for Gerald Wallace. I don't think I ever called that from the beginning of the year, especially Nets fans are thinking, man, this is going to be one of the role players we finally need, and all of a sudden, well, this guy turned out to be a big bust. But I guess I'll switch gears and get my ballers and fallers of the NCAA. But before I start with that, let's give a little shout-out.
I went to Arizona State.
Right.
I'm a Sun Devil, man.
And now you want
Yep, I'm a Sun Devil, man. I got to give it to Carrick Felix in his performance against the California schools. He's not going to be my baller per se, even though ESPN gave it to him. I don't want to copy them at all, but I just want to give him a shout-out since we are Arizona State
Wait,
students.
Wait, so he's good enough to be ESPN's baller, but he's not good enough to be your baller?
I'm just too good to copy ESPN, man. That's all it comes down to. I don't want to steal Andy Katz's pick for the national player of the week, so I'll do my own thing. But I want to give him a shout-out because he deserves it with 16 points, 10 boards against USC. And then in the shellacking to UCLA, the 78-60 victory, he played 39 minutes, 23 points, 11 boards, 3 steals, and had the most insane block to end that game on a very poor play by the Bruins guard there, just trying to make it a 16-point loss instead of an 18-point loss. But on top of that, what really stands out, 2 straight games, the senior forward only sat for 2 minutes.
That's phenomenal.
So that's why I had to give him a shout. But now my actual baller of the week, well, not that he's not one. So we'll have co-baller of the week. Two ballers and a faller. It's going over to another and it's a seniors one, too. Just all seniors in this one. This is going to be a Missouri forward, Alex Oriaki, for what he did. The wins weren't that impressive against the teams. The Missouri is ranked, and they did defeat South Carolina and Vanderbilt. Okay, big whoop. But the fact is, this senior only averages 10 points, but in both games, he had 18 points apiece and double-double numbers with 11 and 12 rebounds. Everything else kind of came into play. Shooting percentage in the upper, like mid-80s or so. So he played very well. So I'm giving it to him. So congratulations out in Missouri. But my faller of the week.
Another senior.
Oh, man, another senior. This one's going to be depressing for any fans who used to be number one supporters. Peyton Siva, what happened to you, man? What is going on? After your team loses three in a row, the third straight loss you have is against Georgetown. In that game, you played only 23 minutes, a little banged up, no points, two assists, three turnovers, four personal fouls. Then it gets worse. Then they play Pittsburgh, and they do beat Pittsburgh to his credit, but he played the full 40 minutes, took seven shots, 2 points, and four turnovers. The only good news for this is thank God he had 10 assists. But 2 points in two games this week, and that's going to be one of your senior leaders in a team that used to be number one.
And he's your go-to guy.
You can't do that.
He's the guy you go to when you need a bucket.
And he had that costly turnover against Cuse, too, that ended up giving him their first loss this season. It was him at the end who turned it over to Michael Carter-Williams, and I gave Williams. Heck, he was almost a default bust of the week last week when I gave it to Williams out in Syracuse. So, yeah, I almost have a bottomless pit falling, too, with Siva.
Yeah, he's just not performing right now.
No.
And there's no excuse for it because he has the ability. He's a veteran as a senior. And it's just not happening right now. He better put it together by March. Otherwise, his stock in the NBA draft is going to fall to a bottomless pit.
Maybe it will. But speaking of Louisville and other Big East teams, let's take a look at that Big East standing, Josh. We'll jump right into this one. So I'm going to start with you, and we'll see if we're going to agree for three straight weeks on our automatic bid, so to speak, to our NCAA. So big conference, and it's going to be depleted next year with all the teams going God knows where. A lot are going to the ACC, though. How many teams from the Big East are making the big dance in March?
Well, Syracuse is going to go. Currently ranked 6th in the country.
I agree.
Marquette's going to go.
I agree.
Ranked number 25 in the country right now. Louisville, unless they continue losing, but they're 12th in the country. They're still 17-4. I mean, they're still phenomenal.
Three losses in conference has to be looked at.
Yeah. They're still going to go.
Yep.
I'm going to... St. John's? I don't know. We'll come back to them. Georgetown I have. Notre Dame I have. Cincinnati I have. Villanova's a maybe. Pittsburgh's a maybe. And that's it. So if I'm feeling generous and I give it to all my maybes, that means I give it to Syracuse, Marquette, Louisville, St. John's, Georgetown, Notre Dame, Cincinnati, Villanova. Is that 10?
And Pittsburgh you said too?
And Pitt. Is it?
That'd one, be 9.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
There you go. I counted for you.
You're fast counting. 9 Big East schools I have making the tournament. I think it'd be anywhere from 6 to 9. 9 is the cap. And I
agree. I mean, it's not surprising. Big East always plays very well in basketball, which is why it's going to be so unusual next year to see this team just completely bamboozled. You know what team neither one of us has, though, however? It's Connecticut.
I was going to say UConn. And right now, they're sitting at 13-5 overall. They're 3-3 in conference. They still have time to put something together.
I don't know if I feel – I mean, yeah, but their non-conference was such a joke. They could have had a great chance. When they started off the season with the win against Michigan State, fans were like, oh, my gosh, maybe they'll be okay without with the new head coaching change. Then kind of rolled on, easy schedule, played NC State the first time, lost by 4. Okay, they're doing average, but then they kind of get the conference play, and that's where things struggle. Their one quality win besides Michigan State victory was against Notre Dame, which is a very good one. But then any other opponent that's higher than them in the standings, they ended up losing too. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. I don't know. I agree with you where this is going to be very interesting. I think my shoo-ins are actually going to be the teams who are currently ranked, and that's Syracuse, Louisville, Notre Dame, Cincinnati, and Marquette.
Is Notre Dame currently ranked?
In some polls.
Okay.
So I'm going by some polls. So I'm going those five. I'm going to say St. John's gets in just because they're just kind of like that UConn team, though, but a little bit better just in terms of spreading the wealth and that they can get the big wins they need to. They already beat Cincinnati, and that was in Cincinnati. They beat DePaul on the road. But then the one where you think this team's not even going to get close to NCAA tournament is they got smoked by 19 to Baylor at home, and then they got smoked by 16 to Georgetown, who isn't really even an offensive team. Georgetown's very defensive-oriented, so that makes you wonder as well. But I'm going to count them in for my sake, so that's my sixth. And then I'm going to give two more to Georgetown and Villanova. Why Villanova? They beat Syracuse and Louisville. Things are kind of rolling for them. Non-conference, not so much, but at least they're getting things back on track. So I'm going to go with eight. And if I throw a possibility, I'd say maybe actually UConn instead of Pittsburgh. That'd be my take, but I guess we'll have to see how things shape up.
Yeah, as I said, there's still plenty of time left. So many of these teams can make it. I still wouldn't be surprised if UConn made a run. Rutgers and Seton Hall still have good records. If they can go on a run, that'd be nice, but we'll see. I mean, now let's move on. We're going to talk next about how many teams in the NCAA have a chance for the number one overall ranking. Not the number one overall ranking, but a number one seed come March in the big tournament. Nick, I went first last time. What do you think?
All right, we'll keep this kind of quick at least. A lot of teams out there that could do it. I'm going to say there are seven schools right now that are competing for a number one seed come March. Those teams are Michigan, Kansas, Indiana, Florida, Duke, Syracuse, and Arizona. So not much of a surprise. I'm kind of doing a cop-out, some would say, and just going with the top six. And then the number eight team, I don't think Gonzaga is going to do it. Why? Because mid-major conferences almost never get that number one bid, no matter how difficult their strength schedule is, non-conference-wise, unless they pretty much go undefeated. I think Gonzaga is going to be a very solid two seed, as they very well probably will be, as could Butler. But I think they always go with the higher-seeded teams. Plus, when you're thinking about it, Kansas let me think about this more realistically. Syracuse still has to play Louisville. Michigan's going to score off with Michigan State and Minnesota. And Ohio State, even Michigan State. So they have their hands full, too. That's where you're going to get a couple losses. So that'll kind of weed things out on its own. So I'm going to go with one of those seven schools. I ought to pick right now, just for kicks. I think I'm going to go with Florida, Duke, Kansas, and Cuse.
Okay. Well, I have the same seven you do. I have Michigan, Kansas, Indiana, Florida, Duke, Syracuse, Arizona. But I have a few more. I think Oregon can battle atop Arizona in the Pac-12, whichever one of them finishes, and really just continues to win, I think, has the opportunity to take a number one seed.
Yeah. Well, the one thing for the Pac-12, by the way, that's bad, is they pretty much have to win the conference. They have to win out the rest of the season now to be a one seed, pretty much.
Yeah. But I see Oregon doing that. It's definitely possible. And then Ohio State I have, and Louisville I have, and Michigan State. So I have 11 teams that have a shot to get that number one spot.
You do the same thing. You skip Gonzaga and you skip Butler. Said they're great teams, but they just don't have enough resume to make number ones.
Yeah.
Pretty much
said it all.
Yeah, I mean,
I took 11 of the top 13, and then the biggest names of the 11.
I don't know. I think it's a little generous with Michigan State pick, if I say so myself. They beat Ohio State, but then I don't know if they're that. They aren't the typical Tom Izzo team that fans are used to. Maybe the only one I would disagree with on your list, so to speak. But at this point, I mean, the way you said it goes exactly, and the fact that how are you even going to pick these teams? Nobody really knows yet. There's still plenty of basketball to go, a full month until, heck, conference tournaments don't even start until the beginning of March. They have a full month of regular season left. So it'd be great to see how this thing's going to shape up. But right now, you do not want to be number one. Just ask Louisville, dropping from 1 to 12.
Right. So if you were to make me pick four, I would pick Kansas, because right now I think they're playing the best basketball in the country.
I agree. We both agreed there.
I would take Florida, because I don't see anybody in conference play being able to take them down
when
they're on their
Florida
game
right now. They're playing fantastic. Although I did say in the beginning of the year, Ohio State's going to the finals. So interesting to see that they were in the hunt for you.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I have my eye on them. Aaron Kraft is the best defensive point guard in the country, and you can go a long way with
and
that.
And I had that with my preseason player of the year to watch.
You did.
That he got snubbed on.
Nice, nicely done. So I have Florida and Kansas so far.
Okay. Duke?
If I were to pick another two right now, I mean, Duke, yeah, they're great in regular season. So we'll go Duke as the third.
It's ACC play. It's a week this year.
That says the NC fan who has a weak team. But Right. Yeah, the whole conference is weak because we're terrible.
Well, it's kind of true, actually.
And then the fourth team, by default, we'll I'm going to go Indiana.
Okay.
Not Michigan.
Switched up a little bit.
Yeah. Michigan's got a tough little schedule ahead.
I agree.
They're, besides Kansas, they're the only team with one loss on their record, so they have the furthest they could fall downward. I think it's easier for Indiana. Like, if they both finish with two losses, I mean, that means Indiana plays better the rest of the way.
Here's the stat of the day for that defense with against Michigan. The reason why they won't make it, they still have two games against Indiana, two games against Michigan State, and then once against Ohio State, and then on the road, Wisconsin. So
so they can earn it.
Wow. Oh, if they win four of those five, they got the spot, 100%. But, yeah, I agree. It should be interesting to see that how things will shape up in March. Interesting. We'll keep tabs and see how that goes. But just before we wrap up our show, time for our fun facts and history time, and we'll throw some random ones. Then go back with our sports ones. So, thanks, Josh, for the drum roll.
That was terrible.
Back in 1845, January 29th, the date Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven was published. For all you literary fans out there.
Well, I'll add one more for the literary fans. How about 1963? A sad day when poet Robert Frost died in Boston, and now the number one sports fact of the day in history.
1936, the year Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth, Honus Wagner, Christy Mathewson, and Walter Johnson were the first players elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. So, holy smokes, we're in a day of history, ladies and gentlemen.
What an opening class for Major League Baseball. There will never be a better bunch of guys that make the Hall of Fame, all well-deserving. And must have been a blast to watch them play if you were alive in the
30s. What a great one in the Hall of Fame. Good stat to end on, too, for this show. So I think just with that, Josh, we're sending it back to you, Akil. But I wonder what will happen next week. We'll have to stay tuned and keep our readers, keep our listeners on the edge.
And at this point, I have no idea what's going on in the world of basketball. We'll find out as we go. But that'll do it for this episode of Full Court Press. For Nick Merrick, I'm Josh Ferrans. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you listen next week.